Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Okay, we're rolling now. This is The Media Project.
Rolling, rolling, rolling.
Yes,
rolling.
Yes. That would be the baritone of Dr. Alan Shartok, CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Ira Fussfeld, longtime newspaper publisher here from the Daily Freeman of Kingston.
Hello.
Yes, sir. And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. We are today's Media Project, the publisher, the professor, and the editor. It's awfully good to be here.
You have that smarmy sort of voice this morning. Both of you do. What are you two up to?
Well, we're just going to see how long we can go before we get you a little riled up and you say something embarrassing.
I'm just quietly reveling in the fact that I got up this morning and I drove up the Thruway, which is a nice drive in this kind of day. And I come in, we'll spend some time with you folks this morning, and then I'll go home and I'll do whatever the heck I want to do because I'm not going to the office anymore. And you're going to be spending your day putting out a great metropolitan paper, and you're going to be running this radio.
That's
network.
Why you're emeritus.
Emeritus, yes.
Or as we say sometimes, emeritus.
Well, whatever it takes, you know. It's a wonderful thing. We actually need to start with your expertise, though, because you began your career as a sports writer, so you would be better qualified than Alan or I to really discuss what in the world is going on with Alex Rodriguez, where there is a significant journalistic issue in that journalists are trying to get him to talk about the drug program, talk about where he is on the issues. And he hired this celebrity lawyer who's quite something, right?
Well, it's interesting on a number of levels. From a media standpoint, it's particularly interesting because the New York Daily News, to its credit, I think, has assigned several people to what they call the I-team. And they have been reporting on drugs and steroids in sports for quite some time. And now, of course, being right there in the home office in New York City, they have really poured into this story, dominated their pages with it, and have sources, apparently, that are quite good and quite accurate. So A-Rod has been on the defensive. And now it seems to me, you know, he's not denying that he did steroids. It seems to me he's trying to just try to appeal the suspension to get the suspension lowered. But again, from a media standpoint, he has hired several lawyers, most prominent recently one by the name of Joe Tacopina, who has a reputation entirely apart from whether or not he's a good lawyer. He knows where the cameras and the microphones are, and he's gone on an offensive to seemingly divert the attention from the steroid issue to say the Yankees have committed malpractice and how they dealt with an A-Rod injury. And it's really created a firestorm and, in my opinion, has not done A-Rod any good. And A-Rod has finally said to the lawyers, keep quiet. Let's just deal with this behind the scenes because I'm playing baseball.
The more publicity the Gloria Allreds get and Tacopinos get seems to me to be good for them as opposed to the client.
Well, it's interesting. Again, this is another example, and we've seen any number of them in sports and in media and in entertainment, where the court of public opinion is what these lawyers are appealing to. And it's never entirely clear to me what they think they will accomplish, even if they win the verdict from the court of public opinion. Because at the end of the day, using the A-Rod case, he has to go before an arbitrator. He has to make his case. Or in the malpractice, he'll go to a judge and make the case. So the court of public opinion should play no role in what the ultimate legal verdict will be. So I'm not quite sure what they feel they're gaining by trying to gain sympathy by going around the lawyers and talking to the public.
Well, respectfully, Ira,
yes,
and you
sir.
Know that I respect
yes,
you.
Yes, right this second.
No, I respect you. You know, you're just wrong.
Well, please tell me, you mean on the court of public opinion?
The court of public opinion is recognized by everyone. It's recognized by the Yankees. It's recognized by other people. It's recognized by Major League Baseball.
And politicians
as well. Yeah. And if they see it going against them, they run for the hills. And so that's why, respectfully,
wrong. I really want to understand.
I'm trying to help you out here. Well, I just did.
You know, you didn't. You said
what
they run
What do you mean
for,
I didn't?
Well, because if everybody who listens to Joe Tacopina believes that the Yankees are the villains in this piece,
yes.
What difference will that make when he has to present that case in a courtroom where the judge has got to make that decision?
Well, judge is different, but I have to tell you something about judges. So now you have the Yankees. We know that they don't want trouble because trouble means seats, right?
Yeah.
You get them angry. Organized baseball, when he comes before them or when he appeals what they've done to him, you know, I mean, it's just like the judge in, you know, some of these military trials. Judge knows that the prosecution wants 90 years and the defense wants 25 years and they get 30-something years, 35 years. That judge knows about the court of public opinion and the military and all the rest. Now, she would deny it, but I'm telling you now that even judges who sit on courts and have to bang down that gavel know about the court of public opinion.
Well, that being the case, then A-Rod must have had his finger to the wind because he has now shut down these lawyers and he must feel that the court of public opinion is gone against him. And it has.
He has shut down the lawyers, or the lawyers actually have decided that it's better for them to be shut down. I don't know how much he is shaping his own defense here.
Or, Rexy, it's possible that not only did he hire a celebrity lawyer, but he went out and hired a celebrity PR guy who told the lawyer to shut up.
Absolutely. You know,
that's possible.
It is very frequent, I think, that a lot of lawyers play the media to their benefit, not to that of their clients. And we've had examples of this. I think of a multiple defendant case here in the Capital Region where five or six guys were all being sentenced on one day, and one particular local celebrity lawyer in the Capital Region apparently told his client, because they all had their own lawyers, told his client, look, you show up with me and I'll just show you how to do it. We'll walk in. So they walked in right into the front door of the courthouse where all the reporters with the TV cameras and the notebooks were waiting. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's the guy who got his picture on the front page the next day because everybody knew the lawyer. They didn't know the faces of the defendants. All the other defendants just walked in quietly without their lawyers and got inside. So there it was to the benefit of the lawyer because he got his picture on the front page of the Times Union, whereas it was not to the benefit of his client.
Well, let me give you another example that Rex is so familiar with. You know, the Times Union, which Rex runs, is a newspaper that has done some very interesting work on Joe Bruno, who was the former majority leader, the head guy in the state Senate, and he got convicted in a federal trial. Well, you know, I think no matter how many times they look at juries, some juror has seen something in a newspaper somewhere. And in fact, when they're looking at appeals, they always ask for the records. They want all the stories that you've done on that subject, even little old us. They want our stories to see whether or not they can prove that the court of public opinion has been, you know, influenced.
Yeah, but it's amazing to me, having sat as a prospective juror, how many jurors have no understanding of the information that's out there. They don't read and pay attention to the media. They don't know anything. And that kind of ignorance of public affairs is often what lawyers are looking for in jurors.
Yeah, we want an ignorant juror.
Yeah, we want an ignorant juror. Yeah.
So if you know nothing, but then when it comes time to decide, you won't know anything anyway.
Absolutely.
About anything.
Well, these guys and women who fit under the heading of celebrity lawyers apparently are making a very good living at it, and they must feel that what they're doing is beneficial to them, if not for their clients. But I can't speak for you guys, but I know that, using Gloria Allred as an example, she has defended a number of people who needed a defense, and so I'm not denigrating what they're out for. But when I see her walk to that microphone, it's the, oh gosh, here she is again syndrome. Aren't there any number of other good lawyers out there who could serve her just as well? But they apparently are dazzled by the celebrity. Maybe they feel the juries will be starstruck when they see this lawyer in front of them.
Well, there's another way of looking at that. You know, when you get divorced, divorces can be very... I've never been divorced. I'm too smart for that. I love my wife!
Say, that's the first reason was that, and the second...
And I love my wife!
Okay, oh boy. Not so smart.
But the But the thing is, you know, when somebody gets divorced, they almost always want what they would consider two words. You're not allowed. The first word is mother, but you can't use the second word on the radio. They say an lawyer, because in other words, this is somebody who will go rip the other guy's kishkas out and put fear in and put fear into the other side. And see, Gloria Allred is one of those people. A lot of times there are settlements, like the San Diego guy, the mayor. There are settlements that happen as a result of the reputation.
So does the media pay too much attention to celebrity lawyers?
No.
You don't think so?
Ellen, you don't think so? You think, you know, I'm interested because you don't usually defend the media.
Okay, let me take that back. Yes! I changed my mind. I realized where I had been trapped. But the fact is, we all know what the newspapers are. They're people who go and find out what people want to hear, and then they give it to them. And somebody sees Gloria Allred, she becomes a personality, and you give it to them. It's that simple. Or as a restaurateur, I have one sore, I'm sure I've told you about this. He came up to me and I said, where's the menu? He says, don't worry about the menu. He says, you want a piece of meat? We'll give you a piece of meat. You want a piece of chicken? We'll give you a piece of chicken. You see, anything you want, we'll give you. That's what the newspapers are.
I'm going to give you a little factoid that I believe is accurate, and if it's not accurate, then hopefully David will research it and will erase it. But Gloria,
Oh no, you say it's in.
All right, there's a legal analyst on NBC News named Lisa Bloom. Have you seen her? Her job is the full-time legal analyst on NBC. Hmm. She is Gloria Allred's daughter.
Interesting.
Isn't that fascinating?
So the apple does not far fart.
Do you know that I am Erica Jong's second cousin?
Ah.
Fascinating, that too.
The apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
And I'm somehow related to the late Edie Gourmet. So now, Rex, your ball is in your court.
It's the cough drops.
The cough drops.
The Smith Brothers.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. Oh, is that right?
No, it's not. If your name is Smith, you can make up whatever you like. Captain John. Let's see.
I think we've strayed.
From the expertise of Ira in sports, which began this, to the expertise of Alan and all things public radio, NPR once again is having a leadership crisis. Gary Nell, who's been the head of NPR for just 20 months, is going off to run the National Geographic Society.
It's a huge job, much more money.
Absolutely. Big step up for him, so you can understand why he would do it.
Sure.
But, you know, NPR has been through multiple leaders over the past couple of years. There was Vivian Schiller from the New York Times, who replaced Ken Stern.
She got into a lot of trouble.
She had trouble because with the Juan Williams and so on. And before that, there were lots of different heads over NPR. Yeah. What's going on, Alan? Why is it that NPR has so much trouble keeping a leader? And what are we supposed to think about the fact that the organization has a $6 million deficit in the current fiscal year?
At a time, apparently, when NPR listenership is up.
Yeah.
Let's all go back to the very beginning. How did we get NPR? Well, as I understand it, what happened was that there was an appeal made to put together for all public radio stations a group that would do a good job of collecting national and international news and supplying it to the member stations. Now, most people don't remember that the stations are their own masters. We don't belong to National Public Radio. In fact, it's very important everybody recognize National Public Radio sort of belongs to us. And we elect a board of trustees, and there's some public members. And what has happened over the years is that because of technological changes and other things, the tail on the dog has begun to wag the dog. In other words, NPR now has a sense of entitlement and other things above the member stations. They would deny that, by the way. They would deny it up and down, but they do. And this station is approaching $1 million in what we pay out of our budget for National Public Radio program. So that's a lot of money. And
so let me ask you about this. Aren't the NPR programs like Morning Edition and
All Things Considered,
aren't they the most popular shows on your air?
They are indeed.
So they're probably worth that.
Well, they may be worth it. They may not be. But the problem is that NPR keeps raising the numbers. So now there's $6 million in debt. And they have been before.
A $6 million deficit, annual deficit, and $180 million annual budget. Yes, yes. Not a deficit.
You're right. And thank you for that, Rex.
Glad to help. I'm an editor. You know,
that's right. And you're very good at it. And
always happy to correct you.
You know, I know you are, but I haven't finished with your issue. You asked me to dissect this. It takes a little bit of time here.
Yes, yeah.
And since Ira went on so long about the dumb A-Rod story, I thought I would just tell you a little bit more about this. And that is that what happened now is I wrote a letter to all my colleagues and I said,
You mean the other executive directors?
That's right. I'm a bad boy. NPR, I always have been.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, look, we shouldn't be rewarding bad behavior here. Remember Bull Durham?
Yeah.
And remember in the movie they said they were all respectful because the catcher had gone to the show. So I think a lot of these guys at NPR executives think they're going to the show, you know, if they just behave themselves and kiss enough behind. There, did I say it? And so instead of fighting for their stations and everything else, what they do is they support, you know, these aspirations of NPR. Now, with the technological changes, Rex, listen up. With the technological changes that are happening now, I'm not so sure NPR really needs the member stations anymore.
Well, they're competing against the member
stations.
That's
right. Yeah. And they represent us as well as screw us. And so what ends up happening is that you have a very difficult situation in which NPR just keeps wanting to get the member stations to do more and more. And that is where it sits right now. Now, if your question was, why do they keep losing these guys? They come in there, they take one look at these tensions that exist in the system, and they know, and they're always saying everything for the member stations. Oh, we believe in the member stations. But if you listen to NPR, there isn't a single story that doesn't lead everybody to their webpage. And sometimes they'll put in...
But isn't that smart? If you're running a news organization, don't you, in the digital age, don't you want people to come to your website?
Or do you want people to go to the member stations' websites?
But that would be to see your stories. So you should be doing the same thing with your content.
Well, we do. Of course we do. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, they're here to serve us. That's why we started them. That's why I took you around the Cape of Horn the way that I did this, by explaining the whole history of this thing. And let me tell you, when you start up with them, they're not nice. So, for example, they play some interesting game. Here is a confession. They'll send a guy down from the North Country of New York near Canada to do a story that goes on here rather than put up with Peck's bad boy and the station that has a much bigger news division, a much better news division down here, because they're not going to help a member station that takes its own course.
Well, and that's why this station has to have, and the others should have, more locally produced programming that sets them apart. Because if NPR succeeds in drawing people away from this station to its other platforms, then you're going to lose listeners. So you need to producing local programs like this one to survive long term.
Which we do.
Yeah.
Same thing that Ira and I confront.
Yeah.
You know, you live or die on the strength of your locally produced content that sets you apart from anybody else.
Right? Yeah, we have, for fiscal reasons and for practical reasons, our company is relying less on the Associated Press than we used to. The Associated Press, to a certain extent, and that's a newspaper cooperative, again, nonprofit, paid for by the newspaper members and other broadcasts,
yes,
the media. They have their own platforms that are taking them.
Exactly.
You know, if I want to read what Obama said at a press conference today, I can go to the AP site and see the story that newspapers are going to have a half hour later.
Well, does that infuriate you properly?
Absolutely.
And Rex,
no,
is it?
Not
you,
at all.
You don't think
we
so?
Don't, no, because we don't. I don't put that on the front page. You know.
That no, is, but that's
still
the point. So we're relying less on them, and in our case, seeking other ways or other venues to find news that is being widely disseminated by AP. So we, in our company, case, particularly now that we're affiliated with larger papers like Denver and the Los Angeles Daily News that staff a lot of these things, we're using their content, which is unique. It's not available to people who might go to the AP site.
Rex is being so
Okay, so now
I mean, listen, in his heart of hearts, he knows that he's paying the Associated Press, as do we, by the way, big money to give them product, and they're competing against him, and it's that simple.
Well, be my bad leadership if that's the case. If they are competing against me, that's because I'm not making the right judgments about what our reporters ought to be doing.
You mean to say that you think it's my bad leadership, which is what you're really saying?
I didn't say that, did I?
No. Well, but it's also why newspapers are relying more and more on local content, because they understand that you can't sell the paper on Associated Press content, which is not only not not local, but which is available elsewhere.
But all three of us are still paying them a fortune. Yeah,
less than, well, in our case, less.
But yes, less than, yeah. I mean, actually, the
AP. Wait a second, let's everybody, you're not on the AP board by any means.
Far above my pay grade.
Sure.
But AP did have to adjust its fees.
And we're using a lesser platform. We're not
lower
getting
level of service.
Right. We used to get the A wire. We don't get the A wire. So tell me why a public radio station such as WBAI in New York City, which has a considerable amount of local content.
Can say left.
Yeah. They're in serious problems financially.
And
laid
they owe
off
that,
their
they
staff.
Owe, what's her name from Democracy Now? Big money.
She's apparently a $2 million debtor.
Apparently interested in the money.
So your question is why are they
in trouble? So why is WBAI in trouble? It's a unique public radio station in most the significant market in the country.
They may not have done a good enough job of fundraising. They may not be able to translate their popularity into actual dollars. As Alan shows, that's not easily done. You know, it takes a lot of work. Notwithstanding how popular WAMC is, it takes a lot of work to get dollars out of listeners, right?
It does. And as I have often said, you know, just because you're left doesn't mean you don't have any money.
I thought you were going to say, just because you're left doesn't mean you're right. I was trying to figure out what?
No, workers unite, the left is in the right. But Ira, it's a very interesting question. Here's BAI, a wonderful station that has been down in New York for all this time, and they've had much internal strife over the years, and you know, that has been part of it. But you know, it has a huge base of people. It is surprising they haven't done better.
Mm-hmm. Here, okay, we have another topic we've got to run to. That, much as I'd love to just argue about public radio for a long time.
Well, you're the one who started it.
The Washington Post, ladies and gentlemen, is considering or has considered using robot sports writers.
I just had a back operation by robot.
No. But you had a doctor actually operating the robot.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, it's true. Well, these would be...
Okay, so how would it work?
Well, you enter in the facts of a story.
Shenandoah beat so-and-so high school, and then...
And the story gets written by this algorithm. Basically, what is actually pretty passable prose.
Yeah, and you know, I used to think this is the worst trend, and I've come around, not just because I was in charge of money for so long at a newspaper, but, you know, with a sport such as high school sports, where there are hundreds of teams depending on what your market is and how many sports you cover, most of which don't get a lot of ink. So really, you're only talking about a couple of paragraphs, aside from the games that are important enough to staff.
But somebody's got to do the input,
Somebody's got to do the inputting. So it may well be the coaches or the coaches' representatives.
Yeah, that's right. Now you got the players writing their own stories.
No, but all they're writing is who won, who scored the most goals.
Well, isn't there always a quote, a compulsory
there,
quote?
That would be, I think, something that's absent, but not always the case even now. If you're having a high school soccer roundup.
Baseball has been very good to me.
Chico Escuela. Your high school basketball roundup is typically only one or two paragraphs per game and probably doesn't have a quote in it.
Right. And if we were to cover, given the regional nature of the Times Union, if we were to cover all the sports, every game, we have 70, 80 games a night that we really ought to cover. We, of course, can't cover. So we have a whole team of people sitting right outside my office, in fact, taking these phone calls.
Are you going to do it?
Not at this point, but I can see how there could be some value to this. It actually would, for us, it would add value because instead of just having the little line,
right,
the box
you'd
scores,
have a paragraph or two. So you'd actually have more coverage than you're covering.
Yeah, and all those guys outside the office, well, they wouldn't be there.
No. They'd have.
Well, they'd be free. Yeah. They'd be free to cover the larger, more significant games of the night.
Or they'd be free, period.
Added value.
And would not have to come back in the office and answer phone calls.
Yeah, there you go. We're trying to see, we have an optimistic outlook that Ira brings to this, and Alan being negative all the time. You know, what's going on here?
Yay, that's me, and I'm always right.
But make sure your union contract is well written.
Yeah, I suppose so. Anyway, that would be the last word we get to have with the media project. This
show should be an hour.
Oh my gosh. Then we could still be arguing about public radio and its future, and how about some more about that guy, A-Rod? All right.
Why did they throw at him anyway? I didn't get that.
Yeah. We'll talk about that on the air. See ya.
They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ding-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press. Extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now, you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, hold the press. Extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess.